This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm your host, Kyle McKinnon. It's in the air, on the horizon, that's right, the 2024 Olympic Games are nearly here, and this is indeed that familiar Olympic theme that comes around every 4 years. Another familiarity when it comes to the Olympics has unfortunately been the rules surrounding gender verification in women's sports, which have been discussed, debated, and scrutinized for decades, but maybe no more so than in recent years. Specifically, the issue of testosterone in women's athletes, whether the athlete is transgender or someone who is developed in a way that causes her to naturally produce atypical levels of the hormone, and the question, almost always posed by men at the top who get the final say, as to whether higher testosterone levels, however they are achieved, give a female athlete an unfair advantage. In the new NPR and CBC podcast series Tested, A Surprising History of Women's Sports, host and science journalist Rose Eveleth traces the century-long history of sex testing in elite sports through the eyes of athletes, historians, scientists, and doctors. And in the lead-up to the Olympics, I sat down with Eveleth for a closer look at the issue and how Tested explores a question that goes far beyond sports. What's fair and who decides? So Rose, I read that you've been following this story for more than a decade and have been actively pitching it for nearly 8 years, and that the answer to your why now is essentially that you got someone to finally fund and distribute it. I think that's fairly interesting, so let's start there. Why do you think it took as long as it did to get this project really going? Do you think it had to do with the subject matter, the discourse around the overall topic, which is a fairly sensitive one to navigate? What are your thoughts there about why this took as long as it did?
Oh, we're starting with a spicy question. I think it was a lot of things. This is a big story. It's a story that requires a lot of time and travel and access, right? I spent a long time gaining the trust of these women to tell me their stories, right? These are women who have been scrutinized by the media in ways that is really unpleasant, to put it lightly. There's been a lot of speculation about their bodies and who they really are and how they look. And so it took me a while to sort of make sure that I could have the access that I needed to make this happen. It's not a cheap show. Sports licensing is expensive. Traveling, you know, I went to Namibia, I went to Kenya, I went to Switzerland, I traveled all over the world for this. I think also, 8 years ago, we were having a very different conversation about women's sports, right? And what the sort of marketability and appeal of women's sports is. I also think that even though these are not trans athletes, that discourse has sort of increased some of the attention around questions about who gets to compete in the women's category. And I think, you know, it's hard to sell a big documentary series as a freelancer just in general. And it's probably no surprise to people to hear that the media industry is not doing so great economically right now. And so I think it was a lot of things. I heard so many different answers to when I would get no's. I actually just recently found my spreadsheet where I tracked all the places that I pitched this to. And I pitched it 26 times and got 26 no's. And then the 27th, I got a yes. So there were a lot of different answers. There was, our audience doesn't care about sports. There was, we think that this whole gender thing is confusing. There was, you, Rose, are not famous enough to host a 6-part documentary series. So there was a lot of different things. And I think it just, you know, I'm a bit of a maniacal, obsessive person. And this story has been so important to me for so long that I just like refused to give up.
You traveled seemingly all around the world for this, research of all kinds, talk to all kinds of people and key players here. And when you think of yourself in terms of navigating these varied opinions and bridging divides, do you think there are lessons here for journalists in particular to take note from to be more effective in covering something like this in what's a fairly polarized time?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think that for me, the thing that maybe I would say, I'm hesitant to, like, you know, try to get too hyperbolic about the lessons around this story for the broader world. But I think that for me, sometimes what can get lost in coverage of this topic in particular, but I think a lot of other topics, are two things. One is the actual people that are being impacted by these policies and by these narratives, and what they think and how they feel and what this is like for them. There's a big power disparity between me, a white journalist based in the United States, and these women I'm talking to, who are, you know, black women from Southern Africa, Northern Africa. And I think that's important to be thinking about, but also sort of not let, you know, people want to tell their stories and want to be heard as long as they trust that you are actually listening and not going in sort of with preconceived notions about what you think the right answer is. And so there's that. And then I also think that there is this moment that we're in now around the ways we talk about hard topics. And I'm a science reporter. I love science. But science can't actually tell you what is fair or just. Science can help you, right? Science can give you information. But there is, I think, this really intense focus on, we need to follow the science. We need to follow the science. And I think that is great. And we should absolutely be using science and evidence to be informing the way we're deciding things. But sometimes there's so much of an emphasis on the quote unquote science that you lose sight of the people, again, and also the fact that science actually can't make ethical decisions for you. Like, you actually have to own your choices about what you think is fair. And those two things, I think, were really crucial in reporting. I mean, also just because I have the luxury, well, the luxury or the pain of having 10 years worth of work on this, I did talk to as many people as possible, right? Like, I really tried to talk to every person, even if I disagreed with them, really try to understand why people feel the way they feel and, you know, get to, where does this come from? Why are we making these choices?
Yeah, and this is objectively a deeply human story, so to speak. I mean, you know, we're talking about people's lives, their livelihoods, their reputations, you know, their dreams. So how did you hold all of this emotionally as a person and as a journalist while still conveying everything you wanted to?
It's really hard sometimes as a reporter, especially when you've followed these people around for years and you've gotten to know them and they know you, and you know, you're rooting for them, right? Like, you want them to succeed. And that's like a classic sports journalist, you know, thing where, you want to be, you know, fair and objective as far as that goes. I'm not sure that anyone can really be objective about anything in the world, but you do want to be fair, right? And also, yeah, I'm rooting for these women, right? I want them to have a shot at it. I think that's a fair thing to want. And it's hard, right? Like, they struggled, and it's really hard to watch people struggle. You know, Max Amali, who you meet in the series, is, you know, lives in Kenya and hasn't been able to compete and sort of struggles to find food, right? To be able to feed her family. And that's really hard thing to hear someone say and know that you can't really, you know, necessarily do anything to change their immediate material conditions. I hope that the series maybe sheds some light on these women and offers them maybe perhaps opportunities in the future to be able to talk to other people about what they're doing and let people sort of meet them and understand what's going on. But it's hard to keep a sort of emotional ballast, I think, sometimes on these topics where it is really high stakes for these women.
And, you know, the tone and production of the podcast reflects that. What did your planning process look like going into it? Did you have an idea of a story arc or how you wanted to present things? Or was that all really something that developed as the entire process went along?
A little bit of both. I definitely had some pretty strong opinions going in, and I think you hear them in the show in terms of how we talk about these women. I think, you know, often when you read stories about things like this, the women in question are presented as victims first and incredible athletes second. And I really wanted to show them as athletes. Right? These are incredible athletes. I am a sports reporter. I love a sports documentary. I love a sports highlight reel. Like, I wanted to show them as like these incredible athletes, which is who they are, who are then being sort of subjected to these policies, right? And sort of flip that around a little bit. I also, I think, wanted to make sure that this didn't just feel like a big dump of trauma, right? Where it's like all these horrible things happening to these women over and over again, and you lose sight of them as actual people who are like funny and weird. And, you know, Christine has these like annoying little dogs that she's obsessed with, you know, and they make jokes, like we're hanging out, you know, they love memes. I wanted to kind of show not just it in sort of the tape and what you hear from them, but also to have the series not feel like it's just so heavy and dark the entire time, and that there are no moments of joy or excitement or, you know, even just peace for these folks. And so I really wanted to set a tone for the series that was sort of curious and playful, while also not being flippant about what's going on, and sort of being able to sort of strike that balance.
So you've said that, and I quote, sports are binary, but human bodies are not, end quote. And I'll say it's pretty clear to see throughout history that men are largely the ones dictating this and keep doubting women. It's a century plus long battle. The goalposts keep getting moved on women. You've also said that, and I quote, in some ways, reporting out this series made me both more and less hopeful for the future, end quote. So where do you see this conversation, this issue going in the future? You know, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years from now, where do you see it heading?
It's such a good question. There are some pending legal challenges to these rules that I think will be really interesting to watch play out. I think that there is more and more understanding that human biology is complicated and perhaps a spectrum. And my hope is that as more and more people understand that, these conversations get more nuanced and more inclusive and maybe change. But at the same time, it's, you know, sports, if you're a sports fan, you know, sports is slow to change. Sports loves tradition. Sports loves, like, you know, the history. They love kind of, this is how we do it. You know, this is the way. So I don't know. Yeah, it's some days I'm hopeful and some days I'm not, which I think is probably true of many people on many topics.
A big thanks to science journalist and host of Tested, Rose Eveleth, for taking some time to join me on The Green this week. Really enjoyed that conversation. Up next, History Matters, and insights into why a local monument, which honors an event considered by many to be the most important in Delaware's history, is getting a much-needed makeover. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.